the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Tuesday morning. According to a California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News report, for less than $3 a day, Americans can purchase enough fruits and vegetables to meet current dietary guidelines. The U.S. Department of Agriculture calculated cost based on retail prices and a number of fruits and vegetable combinations. Guidelines encourage Americans to eat 2 cups of fruit and 2.5 cups of vegetables each day, but USDA surveys indicate most people fall short of those recommendations. Here's what's happening in today's show. Brian German is talking with us about the Sigma rollout that's coming along smoothly. And if you shop at Trader Joe's, you'll hear about the changes to their produce department. Taylor Hillman has details on infrastructure that's needed for more groundwater recharge. And I'm starting off the show today with some more news on Cal OSHA's top-sided violations to ag employers. Let's jump right in. Employers within the ag sector were cited 90 times, making failure to have an injury and illness prevention program the second highest Cal OSHA violation to record. AgSafe CEO Amy Wolf discusses the second most cited violation from the year 2017-2018.
Failure to have an injury and illness prevention program, which is the foundation of any business's safety plan, and found 90 violations for a total of $261,480 in citations. Fine. 2021 will mark 30 years that, as a state, California has required all employers to have a written safety program in place. And I shake my head and to some extent think, gosh, we've made so much progress in so many areas. And yet failure to have an IIPP has consistently been top five. And, you know, in this past year, it's the number two violation.
She adds, like the heat illness prevention citation, employers failed to have the proper paperwork. Either they didn't customize a plan to fit their operations or have too robust of a plan that they can meet.
Folks haven't taken the time to customize and think about what their plan is for keeping their workplace safe. And Cal OSHA is very clear. Your plan needs to reflect what is actually happening in the workplace, and what you say you're doing in the plan is what you need to actually be doing. And so it's not just that they're doing stuff and failing to write it down. It's in some instances the inverse of that. They've written it down and then they're not actually doing it.
And now here's Taylor Hillman with more agriculture news.
Infrastructure and volunteers are needed to make groundwater recharge really successful in California. Many in the agriculture community were disappointed that not all of the surface water storage projects were funded from Proposition 1. However, smaller investments are also needed to replenish the water underground.
What we're really missing is the sort of small infrastructure, the smaller aqueducts and canals and ditches, if you will, that can move that flood water like capillaries, that can take that water from the arteries and veins, the big part of the system, and move it into these individual farm fields that have been identified for this positive recharge.
Western Growers Association Executive Vice President Dave Puglia said it will not only take an investment in infrastructure, but also voluntary growers, which he believes won't be a problem.
You have to have farmers who are willing to flood their lands. But we have a lot of them. We just have to find out a way to multiply the success of some of those pilot projects, such as Don Cameron's with Terra Nova Ranch. Find another 200 Don Cameron's who have land that they're willing to put under floodwater and recharge those basins. That's the largest storage supply we could possibly bank.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
Sigma rules have presented some challenges, but the implementation appears to be coming along fairly smoothly. Supervising engineering geologist with the Department of Water Resources, Stephen Springhorn, highlighted the positive momentum of the Sigma rollout.
In general, the status of Sigma is going well, and that was really shown by the first major milestone, the GSA formation deadline. Roughly 99% of the area that had to be covered was covered. So that just built a lot of momentum. The next major milestone is the GST development process, and we have close to 150 plans being developed in some form. Those plans in the critically overdrafted basins are further along because they are first up for submittal in January 31st, 2020. So I would say that the local agencies, they are doing a great job, and the department and the State Water Resource Control Board are trying to support in the best way we can.
There's going to be some changes coming down at Trader Joe's in how the company will be handling its produce. On the company's monthly podcast, category manager for produce at Trader Joe's, Jack Solomon, said they were working on new packaging and displays for their produce. Traditionally, items such as onions, potatoes, and garlic came in small individual packages. But Solomon noted they will be putting fewer items in individual plastic packing materials whenever possible. Solomon indicated the company is working with two new types of eco-friendly packaging for products like blueberries and other small produce that still require some kind of container. One of the packaging types is a biodegradable and compostable cardboard-like material, while the other is a thinner type of plastic that can be recycled easier. The changes are coming as part of Trader Joe's goal of eliminating 1 million pounds of plastic that's used throughout American stores this year. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Producers who had prevented planting this year perhaps have turned to cover crops, in part as a conservation method and to qualify for a reduced market facilitation program payment. Other producers enrolled in Natural Resources Conservation Service cost share programs are eligible for payments as well. And what that means from an income tax perspective, according to Ohio State University Extension's Barry Ward, is...
There are some NRCS cost share payments for cover crop acres this year, so some may not be dealing with this, and those cost share payments will be showing up on a 1099-G that they will receive, and those cost share payments have to be taken in the year that they are used.
While Ward adds this is a fairly straight explanation,
some growers may not have dealt with any cost share payments recently, may not know how those work.
So Ward advises consulting with a tax professional for clarification, especially as they relate to specific circumstances. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The Competitive Dollar for Jobs and Prosperity Act looks to increase the competitiveness of American exports through currency realignment. President of the National Farmers Union, Roger Johnson, explained how lowering the value of the U.S. dollar can help boost the overall farm economy.
The overvalued U.S. dollar puts American family farmers and ranchers on an uneven playing field with the rest of the world. Despite near record levels of agricultural exports, median farm income has been negative for 6 straight years. And low commodity prices are a big part of the problem. Farmers can't continue to thrive if they are spending more to produce a crop than they're earning when it's sold. If the U.S. dollar were realigned, our agricultural exports would be more competitive on the world market. Increased demand for these goods would drive up the price, a necessary change that would have far-reaching effects for agricultural commodities.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, we told you yesterday that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Public Lands Council had launched a digital campaign focused on the value of grazing. It was created to explore key elements of grazing that benefit not only the environment, but also rural communities and local economies across the U.S. NCBA and PLC's Ethan Lane looks at other aspects of the campaign that are being highlighted this month.
Well, at its core, I think one of the things that people need to understand is that rangeland environments are designed to be grazed. So if you don't graze them, if you let them just run wild, the result is a decrease in the health of those environments. And that impacts wildlife, that impacts water resources, that impacts the balance of native versus invasive species. And of course, you end up in that fire cycle that is incredibly devastating. And when you have those hot, dense, thick, burning weeds, you actually kill nutrients in the soil and you prevent anything productive from growing back in its wake. So, you know, I mean, not all fire is bad. We have good fire too. And grazing appropriately promotes that good quick fire that burns through and allows the ground to regenerate in a positive way. You know, that in itself, just that process of grazing the land responsibly produces exactly the kind of positive environmental results that nature intended in that environment. So just at its core, doing that on its own, if you are running your ranch and you're doing nothing special beyond just running that playbook and grazing responsibly in that environment, you're already contributing in a positive way to the health of that landscape. And then, of course, we have the countless ranchers across the country that are involved in all kinds of cool projects to do different things, you know, tinkering with this or that, or changing the balance of grasses on their ranch in order to encourage wildlife or to promote some habitat here, or you know, there's any number of them. But, you know, just elevating everyone's understanding of not only what's possible, but what we're already doing everywhere across the country is the real goal here. And quite frankly, you know, we are in a situation right now and in a period where not even a week goes by between these reports, whether they're from the UN or some climate commission or something else, and they all tend to make these kind of vague, broad references to livestock production. And most often, they're really talking about other parts of the world where there's a dramatically different environmental impact in those environments than here in the U.S. We are the model of sustainability for the world. What we do here is the blueprint a lot of those other more emerging markets should be following in order to achieve the most beneficial results possible and, quite frankly, the best tasting product. We really are excited to communicate those benefits. We hope some of those people in New York City and Geneva and wherever else those reports are drawn up that have never been on a ranch wake up a little bit. You know, we've done a lot of work to try to get on things like BBC and other venues where we can reach some of those audiences. We'll continue to do that through this campaign. That's the goal here, is to really build a framework to help these guys understand where they've gone off track in some of these reports, where they're really missing the mark, and where they're really missing opportunities with grazing as a tool.
To learn more about the new campaign, simply go to ncba.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
A new hemp seed bank is in the works. The National Association of Farm Broadcasters reported that funding supported by New York Senator Chuck Schumer will help Cornell University create the first hemp seed bank in the United States. Schumer says work will begin soon at the nation's only industrial hemp germplasm repository located at Cornell University. The program will be rebuilt with an initial $500,000 investment by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Research Service. The seed bank will help breeders and scientists develop new cultivars while helping to identify genes for pest and disease resistance. While there was previously a National Industrial Hemp Seed Bank, it was destroyed along with the industrial hemp seed collection when the crop was designated a Schedule 1 controlled substance. Schumer says the funding and new seed bank will help scientists boost industrial hemp entrepreneurship. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City Newsday. We've got more agriculture news right now.
And today's Loose Tale.
All right, due to the fact that I know a lot of you, if not most of you, are short some rain, would like to have a little bit of rain fall from the sky, I'll not whine about our continued daily deluge of rain. We are over double our annual precipitation for the year right now. Last year, we were double for the entire year. But I find it really hard to believe, as extreme as the weather has been in 2019, that it's April the 12th and I'm just first doing what I typically do at least one time each year. I made a little trip last night. I left home about 5 o'clock. I had 28 feeder pigs and four breeding gilts on the trailer. I made a trip to Republican City and then off to Curtis, Nebraska. I got to say thank you. Thank you to those locally owned radio stations that understand people still depend upon terrestrial radio. Because I see a lot of people complaining about radio stations, what they do, what they don't do. If you have the right ownership, you have the right management, you have the right individuals who understand the individuals in your listening area depend upon you, it makes all the difference in the world. We'll explain that in just a minute. First, I want to remind you about the opportunity to be a part of the Certified Piedmontese program. The opportunity is there. It's up to you to follow up on it. It's a $180 coupon over normal feeder calf prices. In addition to that, you don't pay for the breeding. Well, if you AI the cows, they pay you and give you the semen to breed your cows, and the cleanup bulls are provided at no cost. So, what does it take to be a part of the system? Contacting Marlon Will and get more details at www.lonecreekcattleco.com. I want to tell you what, I see a lot of people complaining about terrestrial radio, and I don't even know where that term came from. It's your local radio station, the one that airs the ball games. It's the one that gives you the severe weather reports. This very station is the one who drops everything, comes into the station to make sure that you're up to speed on what is going on with the weather. You don't get that from some satellite-fed radio station. You don't get that from Pandora or something else that you have on your phone. You can get weather reports on your phone, but when you have somebody there telling you that if you are in Sherman County, Thomas County, or if you're in Red Willow County, you need to take cover because there are 80-mile-an-hour straight winds coming after you. It makes a big difference. I was able to make my trip last evening and I arrived home about 12:30 through some severe weather in southwest Nebraska and northwest Kansas, and I had no issues whatsoever because I knew what route that I should take because somebody was there sharing the story on what was happening with the weather. Do not take this radio station for granted when it comes to saving your life. Loose tails always. Remember, be gentle, stay firm.
The best and most beautiful flowers for a bee garden. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. A garden full of bright, seasonal flowers can nourish your local bees through every season. Consider planting these flowers in your garden for bees so that next spring when they come out of hibernation, they'll have an easy source of nectar. Violets, a hardy perennial that will pop up soon after the ground has thawed and will bloom all summer long to feed your bees throughout the season. Crocuses. Planting a few clusters of these early bloomers will nourish sleepy bees. Witch hazel. With their bright, stunning golden flowers, will attract bees and help them get on their feet for summer. Honeysuckle. This deeply scented trellising plant provides an ideal transition for bees between spring and summer blossoms. Bees also love roses, clover, and bachelor button. Bees also adore all sorts of berry flowers such as blackberry bushes, strawberries, and blueberries. Planting a garden that will attract and sustain bees throughout the seasons is a beneficial project whether you live in the city or way out in the woods. You'll be doing your part to support these essential insects while making your garden more beautiful than ever. I'm Kathy Eisen for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West, and welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get untamed. So we're doing a very simple recipe today. One thing I love to eat more than any other salad is a blue cheese wedge. The only thing, it's very difficult to find a great blue cheese wedge whenever you go to restaurants, and what makes the blue cheese wedge so great is the fact that it has a really incredible blue cheese dressing. Now, I don't know if anybody else has ever experienced this when you go to a restaurant and you know you have blue cheese that came out of a bottle. It wasn't made from scratch. So I promise you, this is one really incredible recipe that is going to make it super easy for you to enjoy a wedge right at home. Let's get started. The very first ingredient we need is great gorgonzola cheese. If you can't get gorgonzola, any good quality blue cheese will suffice well for this recipe. And in my bowl, I'm going to put 1 cup of a good quality blue cheese. Now, make sure that whenever you put your blue cheese in the bowl that you crumble it up. You want to make this real easy for yourself because the goal of making this super simple and delicious is not to do so much to it. So crumble it up, make sure it's all small little pieces. That way we can fold it in beautifully with the rest of the ingredients. 2 cups of buttermilk. Now, a lot of people say they don't like buttermilk, but I promise you, if you want a great blue cheese, you have to have really great buttermilk. And 2 cups of buttermilk with my 1 cup of blue cheese is fantastic. I'm going to add to that 1/4 cup of mayonnaise. And I'm going to season this with salt and pepper, always to taste, because everybody has different preferences. Now, if you want this to have a little bit of acid, you can squeeze some lemon in there. But I highly recommend that you don't do that because you really don't need to. The recipe is great all on its own. What I like to do is mix all of this together. If you want to use a blender, that's fine. You don't have to. The blender will make it just a little bit more fine, but you'll still taste all of that blue cheese, and that's what's most important about this specific recipe. Now, the best way to
serve this is to let it sit first. I like to let it sit for about at least 3 to 4 hours. What that allows me to do is to prepare everything else for my salad or whatever I'm going to use the blue cheese dressing on. And the longer it sets, the more that blue cheese flavor is going to just really soak into that buttermilk flavor. And that's so important because this is a very simple recipe, but if it's done correctly, it'll be the greatest recipe you've ever made, especially for your wedge. For this and many more of my untamed recipes, go to www.ajhtheuntamedchef.com. And as always, this is Albert J. Hernandez, but you all know me as the Untamed Chef from Agnet West.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to Agnet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leo. In today's interview segment, we take a listen to our friends at AgWire.com, where Chuck Zimmerman interviews Marcus Castro, a business development manager for digital agriculture. The two of them talk about Syngenta developing digital tools to help growers during their season. Let's take a listen.
I'm visiting with Syngenta at the Ag Media Summit. And first of all, tell me your name, what you do for the company.
Yes, hi. My name is Marcos Castro, and I am the Business Development Manager for Digital Agriculture at Syngenta.
Well, you're as an ag nerd, I love the whole concept of what you're working in. And that's what I'd like to learn more about. When you talk about the digital capabilities and tools that you're bringing to your customers, just give me a little bit of an overview of what that kind of work is right now.
Yeah, so we at Syngenta are really focusing on really building practical tools for growers because they're practical people. And to be honest, if you look in the market, there's so much noise going on. And we really want to be that kind of beam of light for the growers that know that they can count on the tools that we have. And not actually only the growers, but also their advisors who really understand how farming is done in the U.S. The advisor plays a huge role. So I'll just use a few examples of some of the tools we're using or we're developing and bringing to market. We have a product that we're piloting here. It's called AgriClimb that really helps growers cope with weather risk related. And this season, you know, more than any other season, maybe 2012, weather has played a big role. And we recognize that putting the grower at the center of everything we do, we recognize how important that is. And we're bringing new tools with this risk mitigation offer where farmer can get part of their investment back if the weather is not ideal for growing conditions. We also have a collaboration with Sony on the Smart Agriculture platform that's really helping growers and their advisors should do scouting operations at a much faster pace and get insights in the field and really jump from insights to action immediately. And we all know that timing is very important. Other examples I'll give to you is our seed selector tool, which is something that we're putting on the hands of our seed sellers and advisors that really brings the whole science around the power of our genetics, but also understanding the weather environment and the soil environment in each given field and placing the very best product that in that field and really putting kind of this genetics know-how and scientific know-how unbiased in the hands of our sellers. Another example, also using the weather here, is one acquisition that we made last year with FarmShots. FarmShots is a satellite imagery company that we acquired. And they were super fast into recognizing the problem that the floods were creating in the Midwest. And they quickly created an algorithm that can help farmers easily identify the areas that have been flooded and generate a report showcasing the specific areas and the acreage so they can claim the insurance on that. And that was created within a few weeks, and farmers have been using that, and we keep hearing great stories around how that was helpful for them just to claim to file their claims on insurance.
So for the growers out there, where do they go to learn more about these various tools that you are making available at this point?
So here in the U.S., the best place to go is really talk to the Syngenta rep or the AgriEdge Excelsior specialist. They are the people that will help you get into the AgriEdge Excelsior program that will give you access to all of those tools.
So besides some of the examples we've talked about here, do you have a sense of where this is going in the future? I mean, how important is it now versus maybe it's going to be 5-10 years from now to really be able to take this information and put it into a form that you can make real good, hopefully fast even decisions with?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. No doubt that, you know, 5-10 years will be even more important, but there is a very important journey from here to there. Today in the market, there's a lot of hype around digital technologies, and there's also a lot of confusion, like I mentioned before. So growers really need to find the right tools for them to use. That's why we take a grower-centric approach, because we don't want growers to get frustrated with technology. I mean, we really want technology to be part of their operations in a way that is similar to what they do and create real value that they can rely on. So, but in order for the whole vision around what you described around, you know, the data piece really be important, it is very important for these different systems to start connecting to each other, different systems develop in the market, so growers can get the data from one to the next and to the next within their operations and have enough quality data that can generate the insights they need for better decisions.
Well, thank you very much, Marcos, for taking time to visit with me here. We're at Ag Media Summit, and I have been visiting with Syngenta. This is Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
And in more agriculture news, Smokey Bear turned 75. USDA Stephanie Ho has the report.
Isn't it a great day? August 9, 2019, the bear that never ages turns 75.
The bear Forest Service Chief Vicki Christensen is referring to is none other than Smokey Bear.
Smokey, as you know, has been a pop icon now for 75 years. Created in 1944.
Deputy Ag Secretary Steve Senske says Smokey's wildfire prevention campaign is the longest-running public service campaign in U.S. history.
The campaign has touched millions of Americans across the generations, and all with the message that we have a personal responsibility to protect this national treasure that we have.
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, dear Smokey. Happy birthday to you.
Christensen continues, saying Smokey the Bear's fire prevention message has changed slightly over time to include more kinds of human-caused fires in nature.
In 2001, Smokey's message changed from only you can prevent forest fire to only you can prevent wildfires, because wildfires happen not only in forests but also on shrublands, grasslands, and other natural landscapes.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time of day, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Farm City Newsday on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Farm City Newsday, and it's available on both Apple and Android devices. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City Newsday. We've got more agriculture news right now.
Another shock to corn markets from Monday's new USDA crop reports. Last month, USDA's unexpectedly high forecast for acreage and production sent markets plunging. Traders expected a correction downward in Monday's estimates. And yes, USDA brought planted acreage down 2%, but boosted expected yields by 3 bushels an acre, so that production looks to be 13.9 billion bushels, 26 million more than was forecast last month, and almost a billion bushels more than most traders expected. Result, take a dollar dime off USDA's forecast for average corn prices down to $3.60 a bushel. Soybeans, USDA slicing planted acres by 3.4 million acres from last month's estimate. No change in expected yields, so production looks to be 3.68 billion bushels, down 19% from last season, lower than most industry analysts expected. USDA keeping its soybean price forecast at $8.40 a bushel, down a dime from 2018. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And saving money on the farm may not be as hard as you think. Michael Clements has the report.
Farming is big business and nowadays comes with big cost. Fortunately, there are many ways farms can save money, and much of the practices for consumers to save money can translate to savings for the farm or rural business. AARP Oklahoma State Director Sean Voskel says the opportunities to save money on daily purchases are endless.
When it comes to big expenses, farmers know to find ways to lower costs on seed with early purchases, or to renegotiate rental rates when necessary, and to fine-tune crop inputs. But the many little expenses around the farm we often don't think about can add up to big savings with a little extra work. From energy savings to discounts, we have several tips that can help the consumer and the farmer.
For the day-to-day expenses around the farm, Voskel offers ways to save money.
Buy parts and other products such as oil and oil filters in bulk. Tires can often be found cheaper online. And find the best day to purchase items like fuel. Gas Buddy data shows Monday is the best day to fill up. It may be different for bulk fuels if you're looking to fill up the fuel barrel before harvest, but you can get all the trucks ready with the practice that saves consumers more than $300 a year.
Voskel says to also think about lighting around the farm, including the farmhouse and other buildings.
The average home has 45 light bulbs. It's hard to imagine just how many are on the farm, from the barn, shop, and other outbuildings, but replacing those lights with LED light bulbs in the average home can cut your annual energy bill by $300. Depending on the buildings around that farm, that could mean a big savings each year. Just remember, shop around for everything and look for ways to save.
Learn more ways to save Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central Time on RFD TV or online at aarp.org/AARP Live. Michael Clements reporting.
And now here's Brian German with a recap of today's top story.
Sigma rules have presented some challenges, but the implementation appears to be coming along fairly smoothly. Supervising engineering geologist with the Department of Water Resources, Stephen Springhorn, highlighted the positive momentum of the Sigma rollout.
In general, the status of Sigma is going well, and that was really shown by the first major milestone, the GSA formation deadline. Roughly 99% of the area that had to be covered was covered. So that just built a lot of momentum. The next major milestone is the GSP development process, and we have close to 150 plans being developed in some form. Those plans in the critically overdrafted basins are further along because they are first up for submittal in January 31st, 2020. So I would say that the local agencies, they are doing a great job, and the department and the State Water Resource Control Board are trying to support in the best way we can.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.